Let us hear the word of the Lord as recorded in the book of Habakkuk, chapter 3. And we'll take time to read the chapter together. Habakkuk, chapter 3. A prayer of Habakkuk, the prophet, upon Shigionoth. O Lord, I have heard thy speech and was afraid. O Lord, revive thy work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make known. In wrath, remember mercy. God came from Teman, and the Holy One from Mount Paran, Selah. His glory covered the heavens, and the earth was full of his praise. And his brightness was as the light. He had horns coming out of his hand, and there was the hiding of his power. Before him went the pestilence, and the burning coals went forth at his feet. He stood and measured the earth. He beheld and drove asunder the nations, and the everlasting mountains were scattered. The perpetual hills did bow. His ways are everlasting. I saw the tents of Cushan in affliction, and the curtains of the land of Midian did tremble. Was the Lord displeased against the rivers? Was thine anger against the rivers? Was thy wrath against the sea, that thou didst ride upon thine horses and thy chariots of salvation? Thy bow was made quite naked, according to the oaths of the tribes, even thy word, Selah. Thou didst cleave the earth with rivers. The mountains saw thee, and they trembled. The overflowing of the water passed by. The deep uttered his voice and lifted up his hands on high. The sun and moon stood still in their habitation. At the light of thine arrows they went, and at the shining of thy glittering spear. Thou didst march through the land in indignation. Thou didst thresh the heathen in anger. Thou wentest forth for the salvation of thy people, even for salvation with thine anointed. Thou woundest the head out of the house of the wicked, by discovering the foundations unto the neck, Selah. Thou didst strike through with the staves the head of his villages. They came out as a whirlwind to scatter me. Their rejoicing was as to devour the poor secretly. Thou didst walk through the sea with thine horses, through the heap of great waters. When I heard, my belly trembled. My lips quivered at the voice. Rottenness entered into my bones, and I trembled in myself, that I might rest in the day of trouble. When he cometh up unto the people, he will invade them with his troops. Although the fig tree shall not blossom, neither shall fruit be in the vine, the labor of the olive shall fail, and the field shall yield no meat, the flock shall be cut off from the fold, and there shall be no herd in the stalls. Yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. The Lord God is my strength, and he will make my feet like hinds' feet, and he will make me to walk upon mine high places. To the chief singer on my stringed instruments. And so may the Lord bless to us tonight this public reading from his word. Now, as I look around at this large audience tonight, I recognize that the audience yesterday afternoon was so much smaller. So many of you are here for the first time and probably intend to be with us night after night. And you might say, well, we were denied the structure of the first two chapters of Habakkuk. Well, I'm going to correct that tonight. I'm sure Mr. Riddle agrees it would be fair for the benefit of the most of you who are here who had not the opportunity due to your own responsibilities of being with us just to take probably 5 or 10 minutes and give you a structure of the book and then to go on and develop one's particular responsibility, which is chapter 3. Now, the book of Habakkuk is a very unique book, one of the most unique in the Old Testament. If for no other reason than God does what he doesn't usually do, he draws aside the curtain and permits us to enter his presence to behold a secret dialogue between the prophet and his God. Now, God doesn't always do that. Maybe our life with God is not recorded here. But never let us forget, brothers and sisters, that our life is being recorded up there, every detail of it. And so in this book, it is a unique dialogue between the prophet and his God. And the meaning of the prophet's name is most significant to the content of the book. For Habakkuk, as we heard yesterday, it means either to embrace or to clasp or to wrestle. And of course, those three ideas pervade the book. It means to embrace, and just like a mother who would take a fretted child and embrace it to her bosom, so the prophet, like a child, is fretting as he sees the horrendous enemies that surround him and that was rising in the horizon. And like a mother, God takes Habakkuk and embraces him close to his bosom. It also means to clasp, where one part fits into another. And when we go through the book of Habakkuk, we discover that the sin of the people is clasped into the discipline of God. For in the strangeness of the ways of God, our sin and divine discipline can clasp the one into the other. That is another of the great thoughts that pervade the book of Habakkuk. But it also means to wrestle. And I like this idea of the meaning of his name. For upon the very surface of the book, you have a man, Jacob-like, who is wrestling with God and ends where Jacob ends, worshipping on the top of his staff. Now, when we come to the book of Habakkuk, and I fully agree and endorse the divisions that our dear brother Mr. Riddle brought to us yesterday afternoon, they seem to be so obvious. In verse 1 to verse 4, the prophet speaks and God listens. And you say, what's the message? The message is this: in your perplexity, be honest with God. And Habakkuk says, why dost thou show me evil? Why dost thou show me the iniquity of thy people? And Habakkuk says, and you do nothing. How long shall I cry, and thou wilt not hear? Oh, you say no one should ever go into God's presence and speak like that. Habakkuk did, and God didn't reprove him. He simply adjusted his thinking. The lesson is, my brother, my sister, let us be honest in the presence of God. So verse 1 to 4 is the perplexity of the prophet. In verse 5 to verse 11, we have the purpose of God. In verse 1 to 4, the prophet says, do something about it. In verse 5 to 11, God says, I'm doing something about it. Behold, among the nations, you're looking in the wrong direction. My brother, my sister, that's the second lesson that Habakkuk would teach us. Be careful when you're watching for the answers to prayer. You may be looking in the wrong direction. God says, I am raising up the power of the Chaldees. So verse 5 to 11 is the purpose of God. And that delightful section ends, of course, with the words, therefore he says, they shall heap dust, he shall change his mind, he shall pass over, he shall be offended, impute this, his power unto his God. And that's where this section ends. The gods of the Chaldeans. And then God stops. And from verse 12 to verse 1 of chapter 2, God listens again as the prophet speaks. And the prophet had fastened on to those closing words of Jehovah. He shall attribute this to his God. And Habakkuk says, art thou not from everlasting, O Lord, my God, my Holy One? We shall not die. Thou hast ordained them for correction. And as we indicated yesterday, this is one of two great pillars upon which the structure of the book is built. Indeed, the temple of truth through Scripture is built. The one is here in chapter 1. That is the character of God, the everlasting character of God made known. Thou art from everlasting. The Chaldees were but yesterday. Thou art from everlasting. My brother, my sister, this is the great maxim of life, isn't it? It is the maxim of certainty. And the prophet says, thou art from everlasting. Thou art the Lord, my God. And in the apex of his confidence, he says, and we shall not die. My brother, my sister, what challenges is in that verse for us, as our good brother indicated yesterday. And what stumbled Habakkuk in this third section? For if in 1 to 4 it's the perplexity of the prophet, if 5 to 11 it's the purpose of God, in 11 to verse 1 of chapter 2 it is the problem of the prophet. And what's the problem now, Habakkuk? How can you use such a filthy rod to discipline your people? And he couldn't understand why a God of holiness and a God of righteousness could raise up the power of the Chaldees as a rod in his hand to discipline his people. He says, you know, those Chaldeans is just like a fisherman. He's not content with the angle. He's not even content with the net, but he takes out his drag and he sweeps all the little nations into his net. And the prophet was burdened. What a problem. And he ends that section, I will stand upon my watch and I will wait to see what he will answer me and what I shall answer when I am approved. So the dialogue continues. And with abated breath, the prophet stands on his watchtower, sentinel at his post, listening eagerly again for God to break the silence. And so from verse 2 to verse 4, we have the prophecy of God. And as we indicated yesterday, that prophecy has five distinct divisions. First of all, says God to the prophet, write the vision. Make it plain upon tablets of stone. It is the prophecy, clearly written, clearly understood, clearly communicated one to another, that he may run that readeth it. And then secondly, there is an undefined period. in which the prophecy will remain unfulfilled. And the prophet says, it is yet for an appointed time, though it tarry, wait for it. And the people were instructed that the goal of that prophecy was not imminent. There would be a delay. There would be a period in which it would remain unfulfilled. But thirdly, the prophet says, at the end it shall speak, it shall hasten at the end, one translation says. And though it tarry, wait for it, it will surely come. And the writer to the Hebrews fastens on to those two expressions in Habakkuk 2 and brings them together in Hebrews chapter 10, and we won't digress to discuss that. But there, the writer to the Hebrews says, what is a prophecy in Habakkuk 2 is a person in Hebrews 10. He that shall come, will come, and shall not tarry, but the just shall live by faith. And so what of this interval? Well, says God to Habakkuk, in this interval, between the going forth of the prophecy and its ultimate fulfillment, two things will happen. The unrighteous will move toward the judgment of God. And secondly, the just shall live by faith. And while the unrighteous ripen themselves for judgment, in that undefined period of delay, the just shall live by faith. And then fifthly, we have the ultimate doom of Babylon. And as we indicated yesterday, the five woes of Habakkuk chapter 2 indicate the variety of the sins, the horrendous sins that is attributed to the Chaldeans, and their ultimate doom is prophesied. And we noted the last verse, and it's there we begin tonight. For the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. And so there ends chapter 1 and chapter 2. And tonight we go on to chapter 3. So as we complete the structure of the book of Habakkuk, chapter 1 verse 1 to 4, the perplexity of the prophet. 5 to 11, the purpose of God. 12 to verse 1 of chapter 2, the problem of the prophet. Verse 3 and 4, the prophecy of God. And verse 5 to the end of the chapter, the power of God right through the chapter. And then when we come into chapter 3, it begins with the prayer of Habakkuk. We go on to consider the power of God, and it ends with the praises of the prophet. So there are three couplets and an ultimate conclusion. God fits the perplexity into his purpose. God fits the problems into his prophecy. And now we have brought before us the ultimate climax, the prayer of the prophet, fitted into the power of God, and it ends with the praises of the prophet. I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. Lest I haven't time later to say it, let me say it now. Chapter 1 begins with a weeping prophet. Chapter 3 ends with a worshipping prophet. Chapter 1 begins with a prophet in the valley. Chapter 3 ends with a prophet on the mountaintop in the worship of God. Chapter 1 we have the sighs of the prophet. Chapter 3 we have the song of the prophet. What a beginning. What a conclusion. And we walk with Habakkuk through those variety of scenes. And now we come to the final poem, for chapter 3 in reality is a poem. It is one of the great majestic psalms. Probably cannot find an equal anywhere. This great unique psalm of the prophet Habakkuk of the third chapter of his book. Now this great psalm is divided into three as I see it. Verse 1 to 2, verse 3 to 15, verse 16 to 19. In verse 1 to 2, we have brought before us the prayer of beseeching. In verse 3 to 15, we have brought before us the psalm of confidence. In verse 16 to 19, the song of triumph. So I say again, 1 and 2, the prayer of beseeching. 3 to 15, the psalm of confidence. 16 to 19, the song of triumph. That is how the chapter divides itself. But as a chapter, it is one great and glorious theophany of Israel's Redeemer, Jehovah himself. What an epic journey we travel in chapter 3 from Paran right through into the land of Canaan. And we march with God in his glorious triumph as he redeems his people from the miseries of Egypt and brings them safely to the promised land. And so the last verse of chapter 2, the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. But Habakkuk says, a prayer of Habakkuk. Is the earth silent before the majesty of the God of judgment, the sovereign ruler of the universe, marching in judgment as he predicts and prescribes the doom of Babylon in chapter 2? Is it any wonder? Let all the earth keep silence. The living Lord is in his temple. But Habakkuk says, if the earth keeps silent, I won't. And so he says, a prayer of Habakkuk upon Shigayanoth. And the word Shigayanoth is a difficult word to translate. It comes from the idea of a stringed instrument. It is the ups and downs of the experience of the prophet indicated in this musical term. For it is the worship of a nation that identified their worship with music. Such was the economy of the Jews. And so here we can see quite clearly that it is the worship of the prophet with accompanying music. That is why it's called Shigayanoth. In the middle of verse 3, he speaks about Selah. The end of verse 9 again, Selah. The end of verse 13, Selah. And the closing words to the chief singer, upon my stringed instrument. It is a joyous note. It is a glorious psalm. But this psalm begins with a brief prayer. The prophet, having gazed upon the majesty of God, superior to the power of the Chaldeans, he's now beginning, in the course of his discipline with God, to understand the problems, to gaze upon the perplexities, but turns constantly to God. And now his problems and his perplexities turn to the effectiveness of his prayer. A prayer of Habakkuk upon Shigayanoth. There are three things briefly that I want to say with regard to these two verses. We have the prayer of Habakkuk, the prayer of revival, the period of revival, and the power of revival. The prayer of revival, the prayer of Habakkuk, revive thy work. The period of revival in the midst of the years. The power of revival. And I take the two words of verse 3 a little out of its context. God came. God came. And that word came has a past. It's a noun that represents a past that moves into the present and keeps on moving into the future. God went, God came. He's continually coming. He will continue to come for the rescue and the salvation of his people. And wherever his people are in need, God will keep coming. And so the prophet opens with the burden of revival. You might say, not enough to think about. Why does he not flee from the Lord? A prayer of Habakkuk, revive thy work. I was afraid. O Lord, I've heard thy speech, and I was afraid. But he didn't flee from the Lord. He says, Lord, revive thy work in the midst of the years. And you say, Habakkuk, don't you see the declension? Don't you understand the departure? You told me about the rising sin among the people. How can you expect revival in these kind of days? Give it up. You know, brothers and sisters, we may be living in the last days. There may be declension and departure all around. I say never. Never let us give up the possibility of revival. For even though the prophet recognized the awful condition of the people, in his faith he still said, Lord, revive thy work. My brother, my sister, don't let us give up on this matter. Don't let us content ourselves and say we're living in the closing days of the dispensation. We can't expect revival in our days. Habakkuk says, revive thy work. My brother, my sister, let us constantly bow our hearts before the Lord and recognize as long as the church is here, there will always be the possibility of revival. The prayer of revival. The period of revival. In the midst of the years. Oh, you say, Habakkuk, what do you mean? By the midst of the years. And Habakkuk would just go back to the beginning of the previous chapter. You remember that God said to me, the prophecy is for an appointed time. Did you remember that God said, it will hasten to the end, though it tarry, wait for it? So that prophecy had a beginning. That prophecy will certainly have an end. And in between, you have the midst of the years. And on the one hand, Habakkuk would say, I have a conviction that God is the master controller of human history. Prophecy is in his hand. One day it will be fulfilled. I won't sit down and fold my arms and wait on it coming. In the midst of the years, make known. In other words, from the prophecy going forth until the period of its fulfillment, we should never lose sight of the possibility of revival. The prayer of revival. The period of revival. The power of revival. And instantly he says, God cometh. God cometh. Let's pause, brother. I may be taking it a little out of context, and we'll see this later. It's as if the prophet says, I'm praying for revival. I believe revival can come in my day. But where will it come from? You don't work up revival. Revival comes down. God came. God cometh. My brother, my sister, it is when in reality we bring God into the situation. It's then and only then we have the secret of revival. Divine persons alone can bring revival. Even at the beginning of the church period, the Lord said, didn't he? Ye shall receive power after that the Holy Ghost is come upon you. And ye shall be my witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and unto the uttermost parts of the earth. My brother, whether it is Father, Son, or Holy Spirit, there can only be revival when there is divine movement, when there is a movement of God in our midst, and we ought to pray today for the living reality of the living God in our midst. This would remove the formality from our prayers, from the almost predictable language of our prayer meetings. My brother, my sister, I believe that in these closing days, we need to bow before God and wrestle together and believe that the possibility of God bringing revival will be a possibility until the moment when He comes. The prayer of revival, the period of revival, the power of revival. Now from verse 3 to verse 15 is a most inspiring, awe-inspiring description and rehearsal of the mighty, majestic Redeemer of the nation. And it seems as if that in difficult days, in days of departure, in days of declension, in days of mounting sin among the people of God, Habakkuk says, for my encouragement, I'll go right back to the beginning. I will see how God moved in the history of that nation. And even today, the Jews will always recall the wonder of the Passover and the majesty of a God that came down from heaven to deliver His people. And verse 3 to verse 15 is a description of this epic journey that God took when He came down to Moses and when He said, I have seen the affliction of my people and I know their sorrows. My brother, my sister, God came down in order that as their glorious Redeemer, He might with them take that epic journey, emancipating them from the bondage of Egypt, walking with them through the wilderness, entering into the land of Canaan. And so Habakkuk reveals to us the wonders of that epic journey. Now this section from 3 to 15, and we must be brief, is really in two parts. And if you read carefully, in fact it was only as I read this passage again, as I have on many, many occasions over the years, that I suddenly realized in my yet again careful reading of this passage that from verse 3 to verse 7 we have brought before us a description of that epic journey. And he uses the term right through verse 1 to verse 7, His glory, His brightness, He had horns, His hand, He stood, His ways, and so on. He's giving to us an epic description of the journey of God as He moved with His people from Egypt into the land of Canaan. But in verse 8, he turns from describing God to us to allowing us to enter in as he speaks face to face with God. And you will notice the difference in the pronouns from verse 8 to verse 15. It's not now he and his and they. It's now, was the Lord displeased against the river? Was thine anger, thy wrath, thou didst ride, thy chariots, thy bow, thy word, thou didst cleave, thine arrows, thy glittering spear, thou didst march through, thou didst thresh the heathen, thou wentest forth, thou didst strike through the villages, thou didst walk through the sea. In verse 3 to 7, he's talking about God. In verse 8 to 15, he's talking to God. In verse 3 to 7, it is a description of the character of God. And in verse 8 to verse 15, it is a rehearsal as he speaks to God of the miracles of the journey. Now, as we think of these verses 3 to 7, the first section, we find that in verse 3 to verse 5, we have his appearance. In verse 6 and verse 7, we have his actions. His appearance, verse 3 and 4, the Holy One, His glory, His praise, His brightness. He had horns coming out of His hand. There was the hiding of His power, and so on. Verse 3 to 5, His appearance, before Him went the pestilence. In verse 6 and in verse 7, we have brought before us His actions. He stood and measured. That's an unfortunate rendering. It should really be, He stood and shook the earth, and he beheld and drove asunder the nations. The everlasting mountains not were scattered, they still remain. The mountains, the everlasting mountains were shattered. The perpetual hills did bow. And so we have His person, 3 and 5. We have His actions, 6 and 7. And He almost ends that section with those tremendous words, His ways are everlasting. My, we often think, as we would even if we were taking another view of Habakkuk, where in Habakkuk we have the circle, the outer circle of the ways of God with the nations, the inner circle of the ways of God with His people, the innermost circle of the ways of God with Habakkuk personally. But here we have another aspect of the ways of God. It is His ways are everlasting. The wonder of the universal, the eternal ways of God. Even out with the orbit of creation, there is the wonder of the ways of God that go back into eternity. And so, there we have verse 3 to verse 7, where we have the glorious Redeemer of Israel, His person and His actions. Now we come to verse 8 to verse 15, and in this section we have brought before, and we must be brief, we have His power at the rivers. In verse 10 and 11, He says, the mountains saw Thee and trembled. The overflowing of the water passed by. The deep uttered His voice, and the lifting up of His hands. And in verse 15, He says, Thou didst walk through the sea with Thine horses, and through the heap of great waters. Here we have His power in relation to the rivers. The river of the Dead Sea. The river of the Red Sea, when they came out of Egypt. His wonders at the Jordan when they entered into the land. And he cleaved asunder the rivers. And there we have the prophet describing for us the power of God in relation to the rivers. Then we have the power of God in relation to the natural world. Verse 12 and 13, Thou didst march through the land in indignation. Thou didst thresh the heathen in Thy power. And then in verse 13 and verse 14, we have brought before us His power in relation to His enemies. Thou wentest forth for the salvation of Thy people, the house of the wicked, the discovering of the fountains, and so on and so on. The power of God, as the prophet enters God's presence, he thinks of His power as the master controller of the natural elements. He thinks of His power in relation to the enemies of His people. And so we have brought before us the wonder of the sovereign majesty of Israel's great Redeemer. Where did it begin? It began as His God came from Paran. They're moving up from Egypt. And you have the background of the pestilences that happened in Egypt. And then you have the cleaving of the rivers, the Red Sea and the Jordan. And then you enter into the land when the nations trembled, when the sun stood still in its habitation. The enemies must have stood aghast as they saw such a description of the majestic power of Israel's Redeemer. And this is a graphic, epic journey from Egypt into the wilderness, through the wilderness, into the land of Canaan, and throughout. What do we read? God came. I indicated the verb. He came. He comes. He will come. It's the constant movement of God. It's as if Habakkuk is saying, when I look to the past, God rode in triumph over Egypt. He delivered His enemies from bondage. He brought them unto the wilderness with Himself. He brought them into a goodly land, but that wasn't all. Think of the circumstances that I'm in, says Habakkuk. Think of the distress of my people. Think of the sin and the iniquity of the nation. Think of the horrendous enemy that's rising, the power of the Chaldeans. But the God that came yesterday and delivered his people is the God that will come today, says Habakkuk, and he will still deliver his people. And it has an end time connotation. The one who delivered in the past, and the one who goes on delivering and rescuing his people. Thank God for that coming climax, when God will again come and gather his people together, and their redemption will totally eclipse anything that has ever gone before. And so he speaks, doesn't he? In verse 8, I like this. I was just looking at it this morning. He says, thou didst ride upon thine horses and thy chariots. Oh, says Habakkuk, I'm thinking of the horses of flesh. I'm thinking of the chariots of steel that adorn the work, the great armies of the Egyptians, of the Assyrians, of the Chaldeans. Their great armory. What horses of flesh, chariots of steel. But Habakkuk says, God has his horses, and God has his chariots. Horses of spirit. Chariots of spirit. They are his horses, and they are his chariots. And we might well hear the echo of the angel to the servant of Elisha. They that are for us are greater than they that are against us. And the prophet speaks of the horses and the chariots of salvation. Now he has fastened on a word that he's going to use four times. In verse 8, chariots of salvation. Verse 13, thou wentest forth for the salvation of thy people. And again, salvation with thine anointed. And in verse 18, I will joy in the God of my salvation. Here we have four times salvation is mentioned. May I suggest in the first, it's the source of our salvation. It's his horses and his chariots of salvation. And then we have the subjects of salvation. He goes forth for the salvation of his people. And then we have the sovereign of his salvation. He will go forth with his anointed. Isn't that lovely? I think there is a flash into the future. I believe this is a very distinct reference to the coming Messiah. This has a future connotation. God will come, not only for the salvation of his people, but in a coming day, he will come with salvation with his anointed. The source, the subject, the sovereign. And when we come to the fourth mention, it's the song of salvation. I will joy in the God of my salvation. Now we have only 5 minutes left. Let's come to the closing section. We've thought of the prayer of beseeching, 1 and 2. We've thought of the psalm of confidence, 3 to 15, with its two sections, 3 to 7 and 8 to 15. Now we think of the song of victory. But please notice how it begins. We have three things. We have Habakkuk's reaction. We have Habakkuk's resolve. And we have Habakkuk's rejoicing. We have Habakkuk's reaction. When I heard, my belly trembled. My lips quivered at the voice. I was like a fluttered, frightened bird. As I saw the awesomeness of the majesty of God, if he had known John, he would have said, just like John, I fell at his feet as dead. Oh, the awesomeness of the majesty of God. And when I saw, and when I heard, my belly trembled. I trembled in myself that I might rest in the day of trouble. The reaction of the prophet. And then we have in verse 17 the resolve of the prophet. How wonderful are these words. They are almost embedded in the minds of the people of God. Although the fig tree shall not blossom, neither shall fruit be in the vines, and the labor of the olive shall fail, and the field shall yield no meat, the flock shall be cut off from the fold, there shall be no herd in the stall. Oh, Habakkuk, can you picture anything worse than that? Can you? It's as if Habakkuk looks up into the presence of God. And he says, Lord, I've walked with you from chapter 1. Through my problems, through my perplexities, through my prayer. I saw your ways. I bow before you in awesome wonder. And Lord, even though the earth was stripped of every evidence of your blessing, what a resolve. What now, Habakkuk? If there's nothing in the vine, nor the olive tree, and there's no flock, and there's nothing in the stalls, nothing can be worse than that. What a resolve. Habakkuk says, look, this is my resolve, and with this I must close. He says, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. I remember the late Harold St. John going through this book 50 years ago in Aberdeen, and when he came to this verse, I'll never forget what he said. He said, I will rejoice in the Lord. I will spin round like a spinning top, is the meaning of the second word. I will rejoice in the Lord. I will spin round like a spinning top in the joy of my salvation. The lesson, brother and sister, is this. Our joy often depends upon our circumstances. Habakkuk would teach us, whatever our circumstances are, be it pleasant or painful, Habakkuk would say, determine in your soul that come what may, I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. Thank God for such a triumphant song that climaxes a delightful prophet.